right, guys, this is Todd from the South Loop Strength and Conditioning Podcast. I'm here today with Mike Castelli from Dynamic Nutrition. And I met Mike a few years ago back in the day when he was working with OPEX, formerly OPT. He was leading their nutrition seminar. And I headed down to Scottsdale for a long weekend with the nutrition life coaching courses. And Mike coached the nutrition group. And it was amazing, right? The amount of information he offered, as well as sort of the research behind it and kind of the psychology of working with clients and figuring out best practices for people who want to look good and feel good versus people who want to compete. It was just a massive fire hose of great stuff that really resonated with me, because I had sort of started to, you know, research a lot of things in that direction. And then Mike was just kind of like this massive resource that was like, holy cow, like I sort of know some stuff, and this guy has taken everything that I'm interested in to an entirely different level. So I had a great experience with that, kind of stayed in touch with Mike, did some work with him as well, where he gave me some ideas on my own nutrition. And now Mike is running Dynamic Nutrition, and they've sort of been taking off recently with a bunch of individual coaching clients who compete in fitness and grid and all that type of stuff, as well as some supplements that are pretty solid out there, although they're always careful not to label themselves the supplement pushers. And yeah, they're really growing their coaching business, and it's a pretty amazing thing to see, especially knowing some of the history behind that. So that's my butter you up intro for you, Mike. How are you today, bud?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me, Todd. How are you doing today?
And I'm happy to be here. And we were just talking before officially starting the interview, and it's, you know, great to catch up with you, just since we've, you know, sort of stayed in touch over the years, kind of shoot each other some articles every once in a while. And you know, it's awesome to sort of get this chance to sit down and Skype each other and just nerd out a little bit on some weird stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be good, man. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, for sure. So why don't you, I kind of gave you that sort of, you know, like I said, buddy up intro. Can you give us a history sort of Dynamic Nutrition? I know it's fascinating, because at one point you almost shut the company down. You'd done some work with OPEX, and then you kind of like wanted to be a firefighter. And now it seems to be massive. Like give us the rundown of how that kind of went down.
Yeah. Okay. So it is an interesting history. So, I mean, I guess I started on my nutritional journey, and it was mostly self-serving. I just wanted to learn as much as I could about nutrition. Prior to my CrossFit days, I was involved in martial arts, and I kind of got into the game a little bit later at about 35, and I knew I needed to make sure that I had all my recovery dialed. And so I started to learn as much as I could about nutrition, started to take courses. I actually took the first inaugural OPT CCP course with Matt Lalonde, and this might be a funny story for your listeners. At the time, I actually didn't really know or care who James Fitzgerald was. I just knew who Matt Lalonde was, and I'm like, wow, he's putting on a nutrition course, you know, just near my town of Lethbridge in Calgary. So I'm like, I'm going to drive up there and I'm going to go see Matt Lalonde. And I didn't care about the implementation. I wasn't interested in coaching. I just wanted to learn from Matt. And that course was sort of the catalyst that gave me the tools to do nutritional consulting with clients. And even after that, I was super hesitant. I wasn't interested in starting a business. I wasn't an entrepreneur. I've been a career firefighter paramedic for 20 years and just kind of dabble in the strength and conditioning world. And from there, it just kind of kept growing. People came coming to me asking questions. And then I have to give props to a good friend of mine, Heather Gillespie. She owns CrossFit Lethbridge and CrossFit Games Athlete Times 2. And she sort of kicked me in the ass and said, why don't you get a company going? You know, you can, you know, charge some people money, make a little money on the side, because people talk to you about this stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. So I did it rather hesitantly. And fast forward a little bit, and a couple years down the road, James actually came and headhunted me. I remember the day I was sitting in a hotel room at a wedding, and he emailed me and said, hey, I want you to do nutrition for my clients. And I was like, whoa, this is kind of surreal. I'm like, okay, sure. Fast forward to that, and I got exposure to a lot of really high-end athletes and learned a lot as I did the consulting with them. And over time, Dynamic Nutrition grew. I was still working with James, doing the CCP courses, loved doing it, but just the strain on the travel, the family, the shift work, it just got to a point where it was just too much. And I ended up just deciding to pull the pin. I thought, you know, I've had a good run at it, but I've got different priorities in my life now. And I decided, okay, yeah, I'm going to shut it down. And Then along came a guy named Jason Phillips. So Jason was a client of mine, and he contacted me because he had saw some of my work that I had been doing with OPT. And I sort of pointed him in the direction of James and OPT for some programming. He was a power lifter and fitness competitor, and he wanted to get into CrossFit and very good athlete. And he started working for James, and sort of to cut it even a little bit shorter, because I could talk all day. But he eventually left OPT shortly after I did. And then he sought me out and said, "Hey man, you've got a really good brand. It's really well known. There's a lot of people highly respect what you do." He's like, "Let's not let this thing die. Let's build it up into something amazing." And I'd be the first guy to say that I'm a really poor businessman. I didn't get into this to make money. I just got into it because I like talking about nutrition and doing consults and making people better athletes. And Jason's has a really good business head on him. So from there, that was kind of last year, about a year and a half ago. And from there, it's just exploded. We are all over the place now, and I'm probably busier than I was before, but I'm now surrounded by a team of really good people that are really good at what they do. And that's sort of led to the success. So here we are today. I mean, we've got some supplements, we've got, online coaching, we've got seminars we're doing. Like, it's just crazy where it's going right now. So it's good though. One thing that I think in the industry, there's a really big hole, is that there is no real great nutritional consulting out there. And there's a lot of questions with nutritional science. And that's one thing that's always, it's always drawn me, because it's really not black and white. There's a lot of gray in nutrition, and everybody has a different answer or opinion based on what they've heard, and it may or may not be correct. So, I mean, people are always coming to me with questions. So we like to think that we offer the best of that world. And since sort of Rob Wolf has kind of left the scene, there's been a big need for nutritional consulting. So that's kind of why we're here now. So that's the history.
there it is. The hero's journey.
Yeah, it's been interesting, to say the least. Not easy, very stressful, but very rewarding.
Sure. So at one point you had basically shut the company down. You sort of said, "You know what? I'm not taking any new clients. If I'm currently working with you, I'll keep going and sort of, see this out, but I'm going to be a firefighter and I'm going to hang out with my kids." And then So Jason comes along and just sort of bullies you into into keeping this thing going. How did that conversation play out?
Oh man, yeah. When he first hit me up, I was like, "No, man, not interested." I'm like, "What's this guy after? What's he trying to get from me?" I was sort of really put on my guard. And then I kind of thought about it. I'm like, I've really got nothing to lose. And if it's one thing I need some help in this. So I'm like, really, I've got nothing to lose. And this was funny, because I had just really recently launched Max Adrenal. And it was, there's some history behind that. I mean, I put together this adrenal supplement just out of my own need. I was sort of like, "Well, this company's kind of got some good components. This company's kind of got some good components. I wonder if I can build this myself." And luckily enough, and I was very lucky that I found a company and it went off without a hitch. And that's really not how it happens in the supplement industry. It had become really popular, and I was just burnt out. But yeah, well, when Jason came to me, I was just like, no, I don't think so. And he was persistent. And then I was like, "You know what? At this point, I really got nothing to lose. So why don't we do it?" And I thought, if there's someone that can take on half the workload of the business side, then yeah, why don't we do it? And it kind of just slowly grew from there. And I mean, now, like, I'm still just as busy with even less time, but we have some really solid nutritionists on our team, like Kylie and Lindsay. And if we get a lot of inquiries for nutritional consulting, and I can pass them off to Kylie or Lindsay. And if there's somebody I want to take, I've sort of retooled the way I do my consulting, and I have a little bit more room and time for that. So I can take some more clients on now. I like to do more one-on-one, Skype and talk and whatnot. And it's just I definitely don't think I'm any less busy than I was before, but I got a lot more help going on, which makes a huge difference.
Sure. So for you, psychologically, what was the shift, right? I mean, Jason sort of was persistent and you were worried, but it was more saying, "Okay, this guy is going to actually help me with the business aspect, which is the aspect that I don't like, and allow me to do what I want." Is that kind of what shifted you into saying, "You know what, let's run with it"?
Yeah. I mean, it was just sort of spreading out. I guess, all the aspects of the business. And then once I started to see some growth in it, I mean, it was, like I said, I'm not a monetarily driven dude. I mean, I got my name embroidered on my shirt. I get paid by the hour for what I do, you know, as a firefighter and paramedic, and that's just what it is. But to see something sort of start to grow and to see people recognize it and, you know, just to see it build, I mean, that's very rewarding in and of itself. And yeah, I mean, I think that was the shift psychologically. I mean, I was at a point where it was like, you know, it's not worth it right now for me to be ignoring my kids, or, you know, I'm spending time on something that it's not really having a good payback for me right now. And, I mean, James will always be one of my biggest mentors ever. I think I learned so much from him, but I felt I was putting a lot of energy into something that wasn't mine, if that makes any sense. Like, sure. I was working for OPT, and OPT is a fantastic company. I mean, now OPEX. But at the time, I was just like, I just feel like it's not, my energy is going somewhere and I need to put it somewhere else. Like, if I'm going to build something, I want it to be mine. And that sounds kind of selfish. And it's not. It's just, I wasn't really comfortable with all the energy that was going somewhere. So
sure.
When Jason came along, it was like, he's like, let's build this thing. And I'm like, and he has passion and the ability to grind like no one I've ever met. So I was like, yeah, man, let's run with this and see where it goes. And yeah, that's kind of been the shift. I mean, there's still days when I'm like, wow, man, I'm burnt right out today. But I know that I've got a really awesome team behind the scenes. Then they're kicking ass when I might be working at like 3 a.m. You know, like they're doing stuff that I can't do all the time. So that's been the key, is to surround myself with an awesome team.
Yeah, for sure. So South Loop Strength and Conditioning has probably almost closed, you know, 6 to 10 times. And I don't think anyone necessarily knows that about, you know, about businesses, but we, over the course of our existence, we've been open for about 3.5 years, and we just had several insane things kind of happen on the real estate market. We've been kicked around a bunch, had leases fall through, investors hang us out to dry, like all kinds of like insane nonsense that occurs in business that you don't necessarily realize if you're a client, right? And for us, at least for me, you know, it is psychologically challenging to say, okay, like, can we just keep pushing even though this guy said he was going to write us a check, you know, 3 months ago, and we need it 2 months ago, and we're just completely hung out to dry. We have nothing left. Like, what are we going to do? And then somehow, fortuitous circumstances, you live to fight another day and you keep going, right? So
I think that's a really common thing in all successful business that people don't realize. I mean, on the outside, people just see, especially with social media nowadays, they just see the growth, they see this success. I mean, and that's a part of what you want to display on social media. What you don't see is like all the bullshit that goes on behind the scenes. Like, There's a time, and this was not that long ago, that we had one of our supplement manufacturers basically cancel our contract with them. And we were like, whoa, what? I'm like, and that was like, I remember Jason texting me at like 10 o'clock at night, and I was at the fire hall, and he's like, dude, like, yeah, I had to read the email, and I'm like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And I mean, it's just one of those things that constantly comes up, whether it's finances, whether it's product acquisition, whether it's like you talk about leases and money and whatnot. I mean, those speed bumps are always there, and I'm actually at the point now where I almost look forward to that. That's been the change psychologically. It's like, okay, I know that there's going to be problems that are going to come up, and when they do, we're going to fucking attack them and we're going to overcome them. And it sounds very cliche, but it's like, that's the way you almost have to approach it. I mean, at the time you're like, oh my God, this is the worst thing in the world. But then it's like, what do? You just deal with it and you get through it. And that's how businesses become successful. And I'm by no means, am I saying we are, because we're still very small and we're growing, right? Like, we're just a new company that's growing. But you have to attack it like viciously like that, or you just, companies won't survive. Like, you have to have the passion to want to do what you're doing. There's no doubt about that. And that's what makes people successful, I think. It's not about money. It's not about success. It's about passion.
And for you, at some point, did you switch into that mentality of, okay, this terrible thing is happening and we're going to overcome it, we're going to attack it? Did you always kind of have that mindset towards things, or did you learn that through your experiences?
You know what, I think a lot of it is learned, but then a lot of it might be maybe inherit and maybe genetics. I don't know. I mean, you can almost, you know, use the analogy of a resilient athlete too, just knows how to grind, but I mean, which is not me, but, I mean, but I mean, you just,
well, you're a shift worker too. So it's tough to be resilient in that.
Yo, tell me about it. Resilient like a paper doll. I mean, I think it's just something when it comes back to doing something you love. Like, I mean, I've been involved in, you know, in paramedicine and shift work and firefighting for 20 years now. And you do see people come and go through the industry and they just either can't handle the shift work or they're not into the job enough. But the guys that I've worked with for the past 20 years who can deal with that stuff, every single day they come to work, they're just happy to be there. It's like the best job in the world. And that's the passion that carries over. And it's no different than nutrition or that I do. It's just like, I do it not because I have to. I don't have to. I make a great wage at the fire department. My family's taken care of. I got lots of time off, or I could have lots of time off if I wanted. But I just really fucking love nutrition, and I love consulting, and I love talking one-on-one with people. Like, that's really what drives me. And so that's what brings you back every day. It's like, yeah, these business problems, they suck, but we'll get past them so we can continue to do what we love to do. And I guess that's the psychological part of it. So,
sure, no, that makes sense. So for you, you are a firefighter and a paramedic. You work shift work. You have a family. I mean, everyone has time issues. And you know, personally, when I coach people, a lot of people say they don't have time, and they're just sort of using that as an excuse because they don't know how to prioritize and they're disorganized and whatever. But you actually don't have time, right? What's how do you make it work?
Yeah, it's it's definitely a struggle, and it's always chaotic. And there was actually one time I asked James, I'm like, how do you, because he's a busy dude, right? I mean, he's running awesome company and he's busier than crate in hell. And I mean, he's got two kids too. And I'm like, how do you find balance? And one of the things he said to me, and this is James, he'll always say stuff and I'll be like, that's bullshit. Like right off the gate, like my knee-jerk reaction is that's bullshit. And then it'll be like, I'll sit back and whether it's 6 months or a month or a year later, I'll be like, no, man, that was actually fucking genius. He said to me, he says, you can't find balance. You just have to go with the flow. And the day he said that, I'm like, that is a bullshit answer. But now I'm like, yeah, I kind of get it. It's the chaos will always be there. You just have to learn to flow and ebb with it. That sounds a little hippie-ish, kind of Paul Check-ish, but it's true. You just have to realize that the balance won't be there. You just have to, the moments that you have time, you effectively utilize it. You don't waste it. There probably won't ever be structure. But they're like the time I have, like I'm lucky in the fact that I work 10 hour days, 14 hour nights. I get a chunk of time off. Like I work 2 days, two nights, get two off, work 2 days, two nights. I get six off. So when I have my six off, especially during the week, is when I schedule all my consults, and I get a lot of stuff done between the hours of, you know, 9:30 AM and about 3:34, you know, PM, right? That's when I get a big chunk of my business done. I can email and hammer out stuff at nights and stuff, you know, thank God for the iPhone and, you know, having it attached to my wrist. I try to find the time when I can, right? And I let my clients know that, hey, you know what, you can't always get a hold of me, but I will try to get back to you when I can. And I just try to make it work that way. So
it's sort of compartmentalized where it's like, okay, I know I have these shifts that are long and sort of all structured together, and then I have big time off that ends up being dynamic time. Is that kind of the
without being cheesy and using that term dynamic too much, right? It definitely is dynamic, always in constant flow, that's for sure. But I mean there is certain times of my day that are completely blocked off that I don't do business, and that would be like in the morning with the kids, on the weekends with the kids. Like I do got, when I have weekends off, sometimes I got to work them on the weekend, you know, shift work. But on the weekends, I try to do as little business as possible. And that, I totally recognize that can hurt my business. But there's certain things that I just won't sacrifice, right? And that would be the time that I have with my family on the weekends or in the mornings, or, you know, like between the hours of 4 and 8, like I let all my business partners know, I'm like, you know, between 4 and 8, nothing happens. It's like chaos around the house. I got two little blonde tornadoes running around trying to make supper, you know, getting kids in the bath. And that's just my time and the family's time. And then anything after that is like, yeah, okay, game on. But there's certain things I won't sacrifice. So.
Sure. Well, and I even think that having sort of self-imposed deadlines and limitations makes me more productive, right? Where it's like, if I have a consult scheduled at a certain time, or if I play rec league soccer one or two times a week, or I have band practice or something, like, I know that I have to get my stuff done before that. So it almost makes me more productive in order to focus and say, okay, cool, I have to be done at this time. These are the things that just have to be done. Like, knock them out.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. I know I get like between, like, even I've even sacrificed, and some people might, this might blow their minds, but I've even sacrificed some of my athletic training. Now that's still a very high priority for me, but I've had to dial that back. And like, I used to be very regimented and like, yes, I work out at 11 AM. That's the time I work out. And now I have to be flexible and be like, you know what? I can't always do that. Sometimes it's going to have to be 6 a.m. when I get off on a night shift, or it'll have to be at like 2 in the afternoon if I have time between clients. Like, that's just when it's going to have to happen. And I get it in, I get it done, I enjoy it, that's my stress relief. But it's also very chaotic, right? Like, I can't follow a Monday to Friday schedule for that. So it just happens whenever.
Sure. This can be a little bit tricky to go into, since I know that if I start asking you questions about what you do to kind of manage your own stress and your own lifestyle, that can, that can come across as prescriptive, right? People are going to be like, yeah. Oh, Mike does this, so I too am going to, I also have to, right? It becomes dangerous to say this is what I do, because people will take it out of context and just start recklessly applying it to themselves. But given that you are a shift worker, you are a small business owner, you have a family, and you're trying to train somewhat seriously, what do you do for yourself to manage your stress? And like you said, to, you know, maximize your resilience as much as you can.
Yeah. I mean, that comes down to trying to minimize your stressors outside of training, I guess. You know, I mean, there's always going to be constants, right? The constants you can't control, and that'll be the constant stress of business. There'll be the intermittent stress of sleep deprivation, which is probably one of the worst ones out there. And then there's the training, and I think folks need to identify that training is a stressor. And I'll kind of focus on this one. One of the things that I've had to do that was really, really wrecking me physically for a long time was I was trying to train in a highest capacity that I could as a mixed modal athlete. I had phenomenal programming from Mike Fitzgerald. In my opinion, probably one of the best programmers in the world for mixed modal training. And it was extremely appropriate to me, but it was still very demanding. After this year's Open, I had to dial that back as the business got a lot busier. And now I've gone to basically just powerlifting and doing some, I guess, for lack of a better term, like some Z1 aerobic training. And those seem to be two of the lesser evils. Anything down that glycolytic pathway seems to have a really, really massive endocrine demand, especially on the cortisol system. And I mean, I know from my own lab testing myself that my cortisol is definitely in the tank, right? That's just from shift work, years of doing that. But I found that once I made that switch, all of a sudden I'm like, wow, I have a lot more mental focus, a lot more energy. I'm like, this is really, really amazing. It made a big difference to change up my training. And I've had to just sacrifice that, right? But I mean, when it comes to the sleep part, I mean, that's something that you cannot hack. There is no biohack for sleep. I mean, you have to put the time in. If you don't get sleep, everything else will fall apart. I mean, and there is nights that I don't get any sleep, be it from kids at home or from shift work, right? And those days, if I have to go in and I've got like a really, like, let's say like a max effort squat day, I'm like, okay, maybe today is not a max effort squat day. Maybe today is like 30 minutes on the rower at like a 2-minute 500 split, like something nice and easy for 30 minutes, right? Something like that. So I mean, I have to be really flexible in my mindset that I maybe can't push it as hard, right? One of the other things that I've done, and this is what I've done from day one, was just keep my nutrition super dialed. If I derail it, I'll notice the effects immediately. I can't go super low carb. I can't pound myself with a bunch of gluten. I can't handle barely any alcohol these days. I have one or two drinks and I can feel it the next day. That's just because I don't have the resiliency because of the other stressors going on. So that's something super important that I have to keep an eye on all the time. And then, you know, watching my caffeine intake, which as I sit here with a nice big ass cup of coffee, I got to be real careful with that because, I mean, that's just putting more stress onto my system. It does keep me alert. It keeps me focused. I enjoy it immensely. But I need to sort of cut that off at about 2 p.m., 3 p.m. and make, because it'll affect my sleep later on, right? So, I mean, I could go down the rabbit hole of supplementation, but I think we might get into that a little bit later. But
yeah, we can dig into some of the adaptogenic herbs and all of that stuff as well.
Yeah.
But so another question for you then, you are trying to basically minimize the damage from sleep deprivation. Had to make some personal sacrifices with your training. Nutrition is obviously your thing, so you're dialed in there. You walk the walk in addition to talking the talk. Do you ever do anything with mindfulness or meditation or anything of that nature?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic that you see a lot more, I guess, buzz about mindfulness and meditation. I mean, I don't actually take any specific time out of my day to do that. One thing I will do though, and this is something that I do need to get back to. I used to do a lot of mountain biking, and one thing I do, what I find for mindfulness is like spending some time alone. Now, mindfulness, in training, I don't believe is the same thing as doing something outside of your training. So I used to mountain bike quite frequently, and I just like take my bike, just zip through some single track here in Lethbridge. We got nice coulees and whatnot. And I always called it my surfing on the prairies, right? And it was just like, you know, you're just flying through the trees. Sounds a little hokey, you know, you just got the wind in your face. You know, right now it's fall and the little colors are out there. And I mean, it's like escapism, right? You know, you forget about the business. You forget about the fact you've had no sleep. You forget about, you know, all your stresses for that length of time, be it like 45 minutes, an hour, whatever. I actually haven't done that in a long time, and I need to get back to that. But what I have been doing is, folks are probably familiar with what's called ROMWOD. It's basically just like some static stretching and whatnot videos that are related to mixed modal training. You can look it up on the internet and stuff. And I end up doing that for 20 minutes a night. And I find that, wow, after that, I'm like totally relaxed, you know, doing some static stretching sort of activates the parasympathetic system. And really that's what mindfulness is about. It's about shutting down your sympathetic response or fight or flight and activating your parasympathetic, which is feed and breathe, right? Or rest and digest. And it's that balance between the two. And that's the bonus, or that's the win that mindfulness brings to someone who's high-end training, lots of stress, busy person, right? You're activating that parasympathetic. So,
sure. There you go. So before we start getting too geeky down some nutrition rabbit holes, I also want to ask you about your own research, your own knowledge, right? So you are obsessive, clearly, in terms of researching nutrition, hormones, physiology, all that type of stuff. What? Why? Have you always been that way? Are you like that with other things? Give me a rundown on that.
You know, I was probably like that, I guess, in hindsight. Looking back, when I first started doing my paramedicine training, I really, really loved digging into the, you know, the pathophysiology and the pharmacology behind, you know, like disease processes and the treatment modalities. And I always liked the idea that you could fix something, but I wanted to know why. Like, why are we doing this? Why? What's the answer? There's some medics out there that we call cookbook medics, and they're just basically applying a protocol without understanding it. And that never really sat well with me. I'm like, okay, if I'm going to give this patient nitroglycerin, why? Why am I giving it to them? What's it doing inside their body? What are some of the harmful side effects? And I want to know the research why. And that's conventional medicine, so that research is there. When it comes to nutrition, it's definitely not as black and white. And I think the catalyst was I was given, I wouldn't say it was a piece of bad advice, but someone told me once, and if you listen to the podcast, I think I've said this story before, someone told me once that strawberries help your digestion. And I remember sitting there going, I don't think that's right. I'm just, it doesn't, that, I don't think that's right. And I went home and I dug through everything I could to find out. And I'm like, that was wrong. Someone just told me something wrong about nutrition. And this was someone who I put on a pedestal. It was a mentor of mine at the time. And I was just like, and that, after that, I was just fueled. I'm like, I got to find the answers to this, man. And it's always been about searching for the answers. And that's one thing I've always said about nutrition. It's a very gray science because there's a lot of different, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't even know. There's a lot of different reasons why it's not clear. Some of them are political. Some of them are financially motivated agendas. A lot of it is just bad science to begin with and not well-controlled science. Nutrition science is super hard to control. So, I mean, the truth isn't always out there. So, I mean, it's about digging through it. So, I mean, I started to basically take any course I could to get more knowledge and read anything I could. And what I found was I just ended up having more questions than answers. And then I started digging through some of the, like one of my main sources is PubMed, right? The public medical database where they publish all studies and anybody can access it. And that's when you'll find the true studies on what's been done, be it on herbal adaptogens or be it on the effects of carbohydrates in endurance athletes or whatever. And even digging through that, you don't always get the answers. But what you find sometimes is the answers on why stuff is wrong. You know, you have to sort of take a look at how that study was controlled, or was it not controlled? Was it epidemiological observational study, or was it like a double-blind placebo-controlled study? And, you know, is there merit in that? Was it animal research? Oftentimes there's lots of stuff that's pitched, whether it's nutritionally or supplement-wise, and it's only based on animal research. And I mean, we're, despite the people I might know, we're not all rats, right? We're not all monkeys, right? So, I mean, you got to find human controlled studies. So, it's just one of those things that's very obsessive. I just don't like not having the answers. I mean, there's lots and lots of times someone will ask me something and I'll be like, I don't know. I honestly don't know that. Either I haven't looked for it or I'm going to look into it, but I don't know. But, it just, that doesn't sit well with me, right? I just like to know the answer to the question.
Sure.
And that's, I guess, where that comes from.
So, are you like that with anything else? I know that I probably have a somewhat similar mindset in terms of just voraciously consuming information on stuff, and I think I'm like that with music as well. For example, like I probably know the release year of pretty much every album that I own, not because I memorize it, but just because it's like I'll just read stuff and like be like, oh, this influenced this record and this influenced this record, so I kind of know the timeline. Do you have that with other aspects of your life, or is it just kind of nutrition?
You know what? It's probably just related to nutrition, just because I've sunk so much energy into it. You know, I think there was a time, but it probably carries over into other things. Like before I actually fired up Dynamic Nutrition, I was really into mountain biking. And there was one day I just kind of was sitting around and I'm like, I wonder if I could build my own bike. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And I just ordered everything, ordered all the parts. I had a buddy who had a brand new frame. No idea what I'm doing, but I'm like, this can't be that hard. Other people do it, so I must be able to do it. And it's sort of like one of those stubborn mindsets. And then, of course, then what do? I go and I research everything there is to know about building a mountain bike from scratch. And I did it. Now, if you gave me all the parts right now for me to do it, I probably couldn't do it again, because at that point in time, I was sinking all my energy and passion into doing it. But I don't think that that's different than anyone else, though. I think if people really want to do stuff like that, they can. Like, there's nothing stopping us from doing that, right? Sure. As long as you have the energy and passion, I mean, there's nothing out there that's like, we're fucking human beings, people. We sit at the top of the food chain. We can do anything. You just have to have the passion to be able to want to do it. So, but I mean, right now, it's like, yeah, everything about me is about nutrition. But let me tell you, I'm getting really good at doing ponytails. Oh, yeah. And I know everything there is about My Little Pony. I know all the characters. Let me tell you, man. Sometimes that's just essential stuff you got to know. But that's maybe forced on you by your 4-year-old daughter. But yeah, it's about the passion and what you want to do.
Sure. So, I mean, the same way that you can catalog all the different trials on Panax ginseng, you can categorize all the different My Little Pony characters. And
that's right. That's right. It's that essential knowledge. Yeah, for sure.
That makes sense. So you use PubMed extensively. For anyone who hasn't looked at it, PubMed is completely overwhelming just in terms of the amount of content that's available. How do you filter that? Do you use anything as kind of like a guideline for things to look into, or is it just kind of directed by your own personal questions? You start researching stuff.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I should probably make clear is that I don't go to PubMed right away. I kind of do if I know exactly what I'm looking for. It's the search part of it is not that bad, but, if there's something that pops up that I need to look for, oftentimes the initiating factor will be like something I'll read on social media or something I'll read on a blog. And people often go to blogs for like the knowledge, right? Like they're just like, oh yeah, it's all condensed. It's all right here. And that's one thing that the internet is kind of sucks at. There's just too much information, and that's just the world we live in right now. And it's very overwhelming. So people are always looking for that one stop. They're like, okay, give me the 20 things I need to know about nutrition. I'm like, oh dude, where do I start? I can't do that. So, I mean, I'll read something. And I'll be like, okay, this needs to be researched. Whether someone says, oh, eggs are bad for you because they cause high cholesterol. I'm like, okay, let's go dig for some research. So, based on that, I'll go to PubMed and I'll just Google, or I'll just plug in there eggs and cholesterol. Now you'll get probably 50,000 hits, right? Because it's been really well researched. That takes some time to go through some of those studies to figure out what's applicable and what's not. So it can be just as much, if not more, of a time sink than reading through a book or something like that on it. There actually is no easy way to find the answers. You just have to dig through the stuff, discard the studies that don't fit the mold, and just continue to dig. It's about grinding away at the research. It's not glorious. It's not sexy. It's a lot of brutal work, but, if you want to find the answers, you have to. So that's the way to do it. I know that's not a very good answer to that question, but, that's how it's done.
No, that makes sense. I know I personally subscribe to the examine.com research digest where they monthly, actually they started doing it twice a month. They'll put out a PDF and some audio files basically offering summaries of some of what they and their sort of board consider to be the most relevant studies in supplementation, nutrition, stuff like that. Do you use any sort of aggregators like that to kind of keep current with what's going on?
Yeah, examine.com has been, it's a phenomenal tool, I guess, to use. I mean, especially as far as supplementation, and their research digest is excellent too. They actually, I believe, and I don't quote me on this, I don't know if it's correct, but I believe they got that idea from Alan Aragon's research review. If you're going to spend your money anywhere, number one, I would say is look up Alan Aragon's research review. So Alan Aragon is a nutritional researcher, and every month he puts out a research review. So he takes a bunch of studies related to nutritional science, and he breaks them down into his own words as far as the strengths, the weaknesses of the study, and then the applicability to strength and conditioning. It's phenomenal. He's probably the top guy. Like, I don't have a ton of time to read, but I make sure I read that every month. That is some legit research right there. Next in line would be examine.com. I mean, if you just Google it, you can go there and, you know, you want to look up a supplement. You're like, what in the hell is holy basil? Well, I'm going to look it up, and it'll tell you what it is, what it does, mechanisms. It's I would say it's in depth, but it also gives the research behind it and sort of scores it based on the efficacy. You know, it's like, what's a good one that I could say? Like DHEA, so dehydroepiandrosterone. It's a supplement, not available in Canada, available in the US. Precursor hormone to things like testosterone, estrogen. Lots of people think that, oh, this is ergogenic, this is going to improve my performance. But if you look at the research, it actually doesn't increase testosterone in like males that have normal testosterone ratios. It's not anabolic. So it's really interesting. They do a phenomenal job of compiling research, and it's always getting better. There's times I'll look at a supplement on there, I'll be like, ooh, they're missing a few studies. And then I'll go back and I'll be like, whoa, okay, they put those studies in. So those guys are doing their due diligence. They're always working and upgrading. That's another one. That examine.com is free, but then their research digest, you got to pay for. And that's well worth it too. That's very similar to Alan Aragon's, a little bit more wordy and long, but they take like common hot topics and talk about them. So yeah, those are definite go-to staples for sure.
Sure. Yeah. I haven't heard of the Aragon Research Review, so I'll have to look into that. That sounds
excellent.
Legit. Although again, it's not like I need another thing to try to read. Great. No, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah, exactly. That.
So let's start talking about some of the, I guess, nerdier aspects of nutrition and training and things like that. So one of the things that you are always talking about on your podcast, in the course you did with OPT is basically balancing stress, right? Mm. So if we look at someone who's trying to train for a competitive goal, who's trying to train just to get healthier or has some sort of particular aesthetic goal, their goal is to stress their body in order to stimulate adaptation, right?
Correct. Yep.
But you can stress it too much and cause problems. You can stress it not enough and not get results. What is your sort of framework for looking at the stresses people apply to themselves and how those apply to their goals?
I mean, when I start to do a consult with a client, basically, yeah. So one of the first questions I'll ask is, okay, what is your primary goal? And now it might be performance, it might be aesthetics, it might be just health and longevity. Oftentimes it's a mix of all those. That's very, very common. And I try to sort of weed out, okay, what's your primary goal based on that? So, and then we need to identify, okay, that's the main goal and everything should be focused on that goal. Now, like I said earlier, we need to identify that training is a stressor, right? So, the human body is, I like to say everybody has a stress cup and everybody's cup is a different size. Some people can handle more than others. And we need to sort of identify all the different stressors. Training's obviously one. One of them that we don't want there, we don't want our diet to be a stressor. We don't want our nutrition to be a stressor, right? So this is where oftentimes I'll get clients that have run into problems where they're training a lot, they're under eating, they're hypocaloric, they're low calorie, they're low carb, and they're basically compounding a stress on a stress. And then their body will basically sort of fight back and say, no, forget it, man. The analogy I always like to use is like our DNA still think it's like 2 million BC, right? Training is running from the bear. Low carb or low calorie would be a famine. So if you're always running from the bear and you're always in a famine, your body's going to do one of two things or both at the same time. It's not going to let you use fat as your fuel source because it wants to keep it because it's like, dude, I'm in a famine. I don't know when I'm going to eat again. The other thing it's going to do is just basically start to break down through overtraining because you've got major hormone depletion going on, right? You've got, you know, low cortisol, low DHA, low testosterone. So I'm kind of going off on a tangent there, but those are the things I need to identify with a client. So what stressors do you have? And most people outside of training have a lot of stressors going on. Everyone has a life that they're trying to run too. They're trying to go to work. They're trying to sit at a desk. They're trying to raise their kids. So, I mean, we need to identify all those stressors. Now, I don't even know if that really answers the question that you asked there. So
yeah, no, So if you look at someone's overall stress levels, right, you measured some hormone measurements. I know I've experimented things like with things like HRV in the past, which is heart rate variability, which, you know, measures the balance between your parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system. How do you actually track this stuff? What mechanisms do you use to look at how much stress is someone under and are they adapting to it? How reliable are they?
Okay. Yeah. You can go quantitative or non-quantitative on that, right? So if we go non-quantitative, that's stuff that I'm always asking my client as far as like, okay, how's your energy levels? How do you feel in the morning? How quickly do you fall asleep? Do you stay asleep? How energetic are you, or how much do you want to train? You know, is your desire there to train? How are your moods during the day? I mean, these are all really non-quantitative things that as long as I'm getting positive feedback from a client, if they're like, yeah, man, I'm waking up, I feel pretty good. yeah, I'm just killing to get into the gym and you know, crush it. And then, I feel good, you know, after I train, you know, I get my post-workout shake, I'm good to go. I fall asleep real quick, I stay asleep. Libido, I mean, that's one I have to dig in with clients all the time. And most people are pretty cool, but people are like, why are you asking me about my sex life, man? But I mean, that's a super key thing. I mean, if libido goes out the window, we know right away, okay, sympathetic drive is too high. You know, parasympathetic is tone is not there. We're getting into like that overtraining, overreaching scenario, right? That's a prime example of when hormones go out the window is when especially in someone who's like young, good body comp, they should have a decent libido. And if it's not there, it's like, okay, that's one of the first signs. I mean, those are the non-quantitative ones that I can ask my clients day in and day out. If we talk about qualitative, we can get into stuff like, yeah, I do think there's value in HRV. I think there's a lot of variables that can affect that though. I mean, HRV is sort of measuring heart rate variability. But I mean, other things, other stressors outside of that, outside of just training, can also affect that too. Like you could have a really awesome training day. You could have your diet totally dialed, your post-workout's perfect, your carb ratios are excellent. But if you just had a fight with your wife, and the next morning your HRV might be through the roof and tell you, no, you can't train. And it's like, whoa, okay, was that really related to your training or not? I'm not sure. Jury's still sort of out on HRV. But if we get into hormone testing, we can actually really see what's going on underneath the hood, right? You know, if I can take a look at, okay, what's your current cortisol levels throughout the day? What's your DHEA? What's your melatonin? What's your progesterone? That really tells me where an athlete is at that point in time. Athlete, not just being, let's say, high-end CrossFit Games athlete, but athlete being anybody who walks into a gym at least once or twice a week and is training, right? That's what I consider an athlete. And that gives us the quantitative numbers of where that person is at that point in time with all the variables in their life, how it's affecting their hormones.
So how do you keep track of, I guess, the relative reliability of those types of measurements? Since I know from personal experience and reading some research, there's potential issues with, you know, okay, we're going to measure testosterone and it's going to show up somewhere, but, you know, throughout the day you could have plus or minus a certain number of whatever nanograms per milliliter in your blood. We can measure cortisol throughout the day, but if we have this lab do it and this lab do it, they're going to give you totally different results from the same time frame. How do you decide what actually matters when you're looking at those types of numbers?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I started doing hormone testing, it was basically the learning curve was straight up because it's all about the interpretation and that individual at that point in time. And you can't put all your eggs into the basket of the numbers that you see. And this goes back to lining up the non-quantitative with the quantitative, right? Those qualitative values, you know, how that individual feels with what their hormones are saying. So as an example, I could have an athlete who trains, let's say, 12 times a week. 5'9", 5% body fat, 195 pounds. Outward appearance, extremely healthy, extremely strong athlete, crazy engine. We look at the hormones and it's like, whoa, cortisol's in the tank. Wow, this guy's only got a testosterone of like 30 on, let's say, a scale of 30 to 100, with anything above 100 being more optimal. Melatonin. Most people are familiar with it, a hormone to put you to sleep, but it has a lot of gastrointestinal implications too. You know, melatonin's in the tank. But then I talk to that athlete and I'm like, hey, how are you feeling? It's like, oh man, I feel awesome. I'm sleeping like 9 hours a night. I'm crushing like 350 grams of carbs a day. My training is going awesome. I just PR'd my front squat last week. So, I mean, are those changes pathological? And this is the confusing aspect of labs. And sometimes, and this is coming from a guy whose business runs labs, sometimes the best lab to run is the one that's not run at all. And that's when the interpretation is everything. Those changes that athlete is having are non-pathological, meaning they're completely training induced. So whatever that athlete's doing at that time, yeah, are his hormones shitty? Yeah, they're shitty. But does that mean that they're negatively affecting his health? No, right? It's sort of like, the best way I can explain it is that they're non-pathological changes. If he continues on that route for a long period of time, eventually his resiliency cup is going to spill over and he's going to run out. You can't continue to train like that. That's where the interpretation comes in. I mean, I can run labs on somebody and they could have a testosterone of, let's say it's a male and his testosterone is 150. It's like almost off the chart. But I'm like, hey man, how's your libido? Oh, I got nothing, man. No desire, nothing. So does that mean that he has no testosterone? He has no functional ability to engage in sexual intercourse? No, that would be more psychological in nature. So there's a lot more detective work that goes in once you have those labs in front of you. That's not where the answers happen. It's like, yeah, it gives you a sort of a starting point, but you need to investigate what's affecting them. Someone can have a relative low, let's say a relative low DHEA, right? Like it might come back within normal range. Let's say 2 to 10, but anywhere between 2 and 10 is normal. I'd have to pull up the labs in front of me to see the values, probably nanograms per mil. 2 to 10 is normal. And he comes back as 6. And I'm like, oh, cool. That's right, normal. But he might be feeling the effects of overtraining or overreaching. And a normal DHEA for him might be higher in the 10, 12, 14 range. It might be normal for that person, right? So tons and tons of interpretation go into labs. And you have to have the background and the history and the empirical data to sort of line that up with that client. Long-winded answer. I don't even know if that answers the question.
No, I mean, yeah. Well, I think the question that I'm kind of getting at is, say you have someone who is not getting the results that they want, right? I mean, everyone who's coached has people who, they do everything you say, they follow their program, and they just crush it, right? They want to compete, and their numbers are all going up, 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 maybe some plateaus sometimes, but they're killing it, right? You're coaching someone to lose weight, you know, they send you their food logs, it looks good, they feel good, they start to lean out, it's all perfect. But you also have a lot of people who don't have those results. They don't just crush it. They're not losing weight. Their performance is stagnant or suffering. What does your detective process look like with that type of person? How do you start to say, okay, what is it, your nervous system that's shot? Are your hormones blown up? Are you just not doing what I'm telling you to? Am I telling you the wrong thing? How do you figure it out?
Yeah, that's that's where the coaching comes in. I mean, that goes beyond nutrition, beyond the programming. That starts to dig into that client's lifestyle. And I mean, you need to look at all those variables. I mean, you know, is there a subset of clients that tell you that they're doing stuff and they're not? So essentially they're non-compliant. Yeah, I'm sure there is. And that can be a really tough obstacle for a coach. There can also be stuff that we can't measure, right? You know, you could run every single lab you could ever think of on a person and their diet could be dialed, they're sleeping 10 hours a night. But maybe they just don't have the specific type of muscle fiber to be really good at, you know, doing that long aerobic capacity kind of stuff. Or they might have, you know, they might not have very good fast twitch muscle fiber. Or they might not have, you know, optimal mitochondrial density. And, you know, they'll never really be good at that aerobic stuff. That stuff that, you know, is sort of at this point in time is sort of out of our reach as a coach. You know, there is some variables that we can't control. But I mean, as a coach, you try to control and fix and guide the ones that you can. But there will always be those clients that are sort of like the outliers, that they just like, you do everything you can, you use every tool in your toolbox, and unfortunately you don't get the results. And I mean, when I have clients like that, I'll bounce them off Jason. I'll bounce them off Kylie. I'll be like, hey, I've got this client, for what I understand, super compliant, and I'll give them the lowdown, doing everything they can. What do you guys think? And that's where you need to put your ego aside as a coach and say, hey, I don't have the answers for this, but I know some really smart people out there, and maybe they do, right? And oftentimes if you let your client know, you're like, hey, I'm getting a second opinion on this, that really speaks volumes to them. They're like, okay, cool. You know, he's going outside of his own toolbox. He's trying to figure this out for me. So, but yeah, that's a tough one for a coach.
Sure.
That's a tough one. Yep.
And then if you say you start to suspect someone has issues with potentially overtraining or bottoming out their hormones, you know, this is sort of a controversial gray area to discuss things like overtraining or cortisol insufficiency or quote unquote adrenal fatigue. What do you look for there, and how do you start to treat something like that for someone?
Yeah, I mean, and that's it's funny you mentioned that. Oh, that's controversial. Because it is and it isn't. It's funny. I don't want to go down this too much, but I mean, that's a term. Either it's adrenal dysfunction, adrenal fatigue, adrenal insufficiency. I mean, all those terms are really taboo in conventional medicine. They really just address Cushing syndrome and Addison's, really on one end of the cortisol spectrum and the other, right? Too much or too little. And they don't really recognize anything subclinical. And I mean, you know, CrossFit just recently put something on their journal about that too. That was actually written by the guys at examine.com, which I definitely didn't agree with. I mean, I've got thousands of data points on it, and you see it so much. But where do you start with it? I mean, usually when a client comes to me, like let's say figuratively, they walk in the door and they give me their story. You can tell right away if someone's in that overtraining scenario, whether it's overtraining, overreaching, whatever. Just by the sort of the signs and symptoms that they give you, it's like, yeah, not sleeping, not able to lose weight, you know, feeling fatigued in the morning, et cetera, et cetera. You can start to address that without even running labs, right? I mean, you just start to address the dietary components, the lifestyle components, the training. That's always a big one. And that's the first thing I say to my client, okay, programming is not my forte, I understand it, but you need to look at this as a stressor and see if it's too much. Oftentimes dialing back that training makes someone feel amazingly better. Like me, case in point, and I've done it a couple times through my career. Dialed it back, whoa, all of a sudden, hey, I got energy, I can sleep, go figure. The diet is obviously a big one. What we're seeing now is a huge, thankfully, shift away from the low carb scene. Anytime you apply low carb to any sort of intense training, you're going to get nothing but poor results from that. I know it's still very in vogue within the endurance community, but I've never seen anything but negative results come from that over time, especially hormonally. Lifestyle factors are always a big one too. I mean, these are always things any coach can address this. But then if you want to get the baseline, we test their labs, right? Like we do the salivary test with the cortisol, DHA, all that. Then you figure out where that client's at. And then from there, it's like, okay, we start to address all those points I mentioned and, you know, start building back up that resiliency by removing some of those stressors.
And then with, I know I work with a decent amount of higher level fitness competitors, right? People who want to compete at the regional or maybe the games level in CrossFit. Some of them do stuff like Grid as well. And it's sort of funny since if you look online, there's a lot of like inspirational fitness quotes where it's like, you know, you just got to get out there and grind. Like today is the first day of the rest of your life. Like no, never quit anything ever. And these people are sort of like inundated with these like no quitting, like never back down types of messages. And I actually find that most of them swing way too far towards that end of the pendulum. They're very overly driven. They're overly analytical. They push themselves too hard all the time. And trying to get them to recognize the value in backing off or taking a rest day or not obsessively going nuts over food quality all the time. How do you get people to take it down a notch when you're working with them?
If someone's in that scenario and they're not making progress, I mean, sometimes the labs can be like an in your face thing. When someone sees that they literally have no cortisol, they're like, wow, I really do need to back down a little bit. I mean, that can be one of those things that'll sort of help that client because that mindset is very strong. People always think that more is better and oftentimes less is more. I've come across some really good programmers who will forcefully put in specific rest days for clients who have the potential to train, but they understand that rest and recovery is where the client is making the gains. It's not when they're in the gym destroying themselves. It's like when they're resting, right? And that's so essential, especially if we consider the season of CrossFit, right? From the point of the end of regionals or the games or the open to the next year, you mean you need to be considering your recovery for that whole point in time, right? That hormonal reserve. And if you're like just slightly overtraining every day, by the time, you know, February rolls around, you're in a world of hurt and you're nowhere able to compete at the level that you need to. So I think it's just a candid conversation you need to have with your client and say, hey, you know what, sometimes less is more. Let's dial this back. Let's make this smart. And that's tough for people because they see the volume that the athletes are able to handle, you know, when they watch the CrossFit Games, and they're like, I have to put that volume into my training or I'm never going to make it. And I'm like, no, you don't have to put that volume into your training. But it seems to be the trend is more and more and more. And it's what we're seeing is more and more and more damaged athletes and athletes that shouldn't be overtrained, but they are, right? Yeah, that's one that just needs to be battled out by the coach, and you need to have smart programming. And when it comes to diet, yeah, you get some people who are really, really, really anal about their diet. And I mean, you can loosen it up. I mean, I think it's important to have a coach sort of monitor that to make sure, okay, you know, we got the right macros in there. We got the right quantity of food. The quality's good, but some people do take it a little too far, and you can have, you know, develop some eating disorders over it. But that's where a coach needs to come in and guide that athlete on that.
Sure. So let's talk about some of your supplements. You guys recently launched Max Sleep. You have Max Adrenal out there. This is stuff that's based upon your own research, right? You've sort of gone through it and said, this is the best stuff out there. I want it in these ratios. I want this blend of herbs. Can you give us a rundown? Let's start with Max Adrenal. So it's sure. mostly adaptogenic herbs and then some other micronutrients. What's the deal with the formulation there?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I started doing my consults with my clients for their lab work, and I saw lots of people with hormone issues, I was using products from different companies based on what I saw. And sometimes I was like, okay, yeah, this company's got this, and this component. I like that. This company's got this. Oh, but I don't want that for my client right now. So I started sitting here at the desk that I'm sitting at today, and I was just like, you know, I had these bottles in front of me. I'm like, I wonder if I could make this into one product. And I contacted a manufacturer in Canada. Luckily enough, they're like, yep, let's do it. I was like, okay, cool. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just like, okay. They're like, yeah, we'll make the label for you. We'll do everything. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. And that actually doesn't happen in the supplement industry that often, where you got sort of a turnkey production manufacturer like that. And so I put together Max Adrenal. And I was very fortunate that they were able to do that. So, I mean, the components that are in there are just the stuff that I wanted to see my clients taking for specific reasons. Like there's specific adaptogens in there. There's specific neurotransmitter precursors, which is something that you actually don't see a lot of in adrenal supplementation. And that's actually sort of a deep rabbit hole we could go down. But a lot of clients who run into adrenal issues, it's not just a lack of cortisol resulting in, you know, poor performance in the gym. It results in a lot of mood changes, some depression, lack of focus. And that has to do with lack of cortisol, and then cortisol is a precursor to items like neurotransmitters like norepinephrine and dopamine. And if we don't have that drive and focus, we're not going to be, one, very effective at anything we do. And two, we're not going to have the drive to train in the gym, right? So I added in those specific components too. So, did you want to talk a little bit about how the adaptogens work and why?
Those are fascinating, right? So adaptogens are a certain class of herbs. And can you kind of explain how they work, what they do, and why they're so beneficial for stress management?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, 5 years ago, prior to getting into this, I would have said, oh, you know what? I don't need to deal with Chinese or Indian medicine. This is science and athletes we're dealing with, you know. But some of the research now behind these herbal adaptogens is really, really fascinating, especially when it comes to stress attenuation. So what I mean by that is, I often use the analogy, imagine I'm a lion tamer and you're not. I walk into the lion cage in the morning and I'm like, hey boys, how's it going? I got a plate, I'm throwing steaks, everybody's cool, right? At that point in time, my stress perception is zero. I'm not stressed by that situation. So our adrenals, which sit on top of our kidneys, are governed by our HPA, our hypothalamic pituitary axis. Basically, our brain controls our adrenals. So at that point in time, my brain's like, oh, totally normal situation. This is like a regular day at work. If you walk into that lion cage, you're like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Your stress is 10 out of 10. But those lions are just sitting there. They're looking at you like, what's this guy's problem? Nothing's physically happening, but your HPA is firing your adrenals like it's a fight or flight situation. Your cortisol is maxed, right? Herbal adaptogens attenuate that stress response. So they basically dampen down that stress. Why I have them in Max Adrenal is that as an athlete, you're training really hard. That's a stress response. You have stressors outside of the gym. That's a stress response. We're trying to take the load off of your hypothalamic pituitary axis and therefore take the load off having your adrenals fire out so much cortisol. Most folks will have very low cortisol. And this is sort of inverse to what people think. They're like, whoa, you got to stop drinking coffee because your cortisol is high, or, you know, you got to do yoga because your cortisol is high. Your cortisol probably was initially high at one point in time, but that's when people feel really fantastic, right? That's when whatever stressors they have in their life, their compensatory mechanisms are firing appropriately. They're secreting a ton of cortisol because they have the reserve to do that. Over time, that reserve drops, and that's when you start getting symptomatic. So what we want to do to treat this is to sort of take the load off the stress on your HPA axis. And that's why those are in there. And it's not just one herb we have in there. Like, it's not just the ginseng. It's not just the rhodiola. There's a bunch that work synergistically, whether it's bacopa, whether it's Panax ginseng, whether it's what else we got in there? Ashwagandha, that's a big one that we've got in there. That's a really awesome one. Relora, which is a combination of magnolia, they all work synergistically together. If you look at the research behind it, those adaptogens will do different things. Some will raise cortisol in an appropriate manner. Others will lower the cortisol in an appropriate manner. Very interesting. Research is still, you know, just in its infancy, but they definitely work. There's absolutely no doubt about it, for sure. It's a staple in my life. Let's just say that.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then the second component to that, which this is probably the items that people will get the biggest bang for their buck out of as far as what they feel, would be the D-L-phenylalanine and the L-tyrosine. And these are precursors to the dopamine and norepinephrine. Oftentimes, some of the feedback I was getting from people were like, wow, you know, I'm super focused. I need less caffeine during the day. You know, I really got to drive for training. Or someone will be like, oh yeah, you know, I got all these clients I got a program for. I can sit down and I'm not distracted. I'm getting all this shit done in like a record amount of time. And that's the tyrosine and the DLPA that are like, you know, firing up that dopamine and the norepinephrine there, because that's been depleted through the adrenal dysfunction. So
the goal is basically to modulate the stress response so it occurs correctly relative to stressors, either enough response or take some of the edge off of it if it's excessive, and to also balance out neurotransmitters. Is that kind of the goal with the formulation?
That's pretty much exactly it. Yeah. And I mean, I'm always talking about it in reference to athletes, but I do have some, you know, some regular folk who, like, you know, spin their wheels at the gym and do their thing. And they're just like, yeah, you know, one of the things I've noticed is that I'm sleeping better. And I was like, really? I'm like, when I designed this supplement, I'm like, I never, ever expected that to happen. And continually, I got more and more people emailing me saying, wow, I'm sleeping like a log now. And I had to go back and look at the research. And I'm like, why the hell is this happening? Not that I'm complaining, but I'm like, this is a great side effect. But when we start to dampen down that sympathetic response, that fight or flight, we let the parasympathetic, you know, balance out. And that's that feed and breathe and rest and digest. And if you're really jacked up, anyone will know this, you know, you go out and you do a training session at 9 p.m. at night, tell me how well you're going to sleep. It's not going to happen, right? That's because your sympathetic is jacked right up. And this would sort of balance that out, and it's letting people sleep. And this was actually one of the reasons why I almost didn't develop Max Sleep, because I'm like, I don't know, man, this Max Adrenal is working so damn good. Do we really need a sleep supplement?
We already got it covered.
Yeah. I was like, wow, this was unexpected. And then, and this is one that, that always amazed me. It still makes me chuckle to this day. I started to get a lot of feedback from guys, and they're just like, yeah, man, I got some crazy morning wood going on. And I'm like, really? They're like, yeah. Like, what did you put in this stuff? And I'm like, okay, got to go back and look at the research. And it was, once again, it comes back to dampening down that sympathetic response and letting the parasympathetic, you know, balance out. And that parasympathetic is feed and breed, right? And we can't be running from the bear and thinking about engaging in procreation. That just doesn't happen at the same time. It's like, if I'm running from the bear, man, I'm not thinking about sex. But when when we let that parasympathetic happen, it's like, yeah, digestion improves, sexual function improves. Got tons and tons of emails and people are like, you know, wives emailing me, be like, when do you got this shit back in stock, man? I need it for my husband. I was like, okay. So it's been a very interesting supplement with a lot of positive effects that I never actually intended. So yeah, I mean, adaptogens, used to think that it was kind of Mickey Mouse, but they are money. They're definitely, in this day and age of North America, 2015, I would say it's almost essential.
Sure. And then with you started to mention max sleep. What's the formulation there? It seems to be more focused on upregulating neurotransmitters that cause sleep. Is that kind of the thought process there?
Yeah, I mean, so with max sleep, this one's got a lot of personal experience behind it. I mean, max adrenal, I developed for my clients. Obviously, you know, it's a little bit self-serving with myself and my life too. But with max sleep, this is stuff I'd been dabbling with over the past 20 years. Sleep's always been one of those things that's evaded me just due to the shift work. And I know that when I don't get it, I feel like I've been hit by a bus. Some people do well, or they do okay with sleep deprivation. I definitely don't. And as I got older, it started to affect me even more. So I've always used ZMA as a very staple supplement with my clientele. ZMA would be zinc magnesium aspartate. Basically a trademarked formula by Victor Conte. People know Victor Conte, guy who developed Balco Labs. also developed the steroid, the Clear. But he was a genius in the fact that he trademarked ZMA. It's really not that fancy of a supplement.
So Dynamic Nutrition is going down the pathway of Balco Labs. Is that what you're saying?
Ooh, we're going to have to edit that out. Yeah. No, let's make that clear. No, but I've just recognized genius for what it is, whether it's on the good side or bad side, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I mean, so with zinc and magnesium, those are two of the minerals that are most deficient in athletes. We basically sweat out our zinc. We're burning through our magnesium. We don't really get really good quantities from food nowadays. It's not very bioavailable. But how does it play a role in sleep? Magnesium causes like deep tendon muscle relaxation. People are often familiar with, what's that shit called? Natural Calm. That was a big one that used to be pushed. And it basically just causes you to be physically relaxed. Zinc plays a role in helping deepen REM sleep. And then the B6 that's in there just helps the conversion of serotonin to melatonin, right? So it's a great sleep supplement, zero hangover effects. I've been using it for years and years and years. And that's one that I always prescribe for my clients, but I'm like, okay, let's take this ZMA to the next level. Some people need GABA. GABA is gamma aminobutyric acid. It's an inhibitory neurotransmitter. Often folks are like, they're tired and wired or anxious. They have trouble falling asleep. GABA is an inhibitory neurotransmitter that's going to help you go to sleep. If we consider certain pharmaceuticals like benzodiazepines, so this would be like your Valium, your Midazolam, your Ativan. There's lots of different trade names in the US, stuff like Ambien. These all work on the GABA receptors. GABA, when we add it in an oral dose, really doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier all that well, but it's enough that it causes a bit of an inhibitory neurotransmitter effect. So it sort of dials us back, calms us down. I put 5-HTP in there, and I want to talk about melatonin a bit. So 5-HTP is a precursor to melatonin. I really don't like melatonin as an over-the-counter supplement. It works really well for some people, but you need to do lab testing to figure out what your endogenous melatonin levels are. Despite the fact that I have a stressful lifestyle and I don't get a lot of sleep all the time, my endogenous melatonin levels are awesome. Yay me, it's one of those things that I've just been lucky with. The downside is when I take melatonin, it feels like I've been drinking all night in the morning. I wake up, I got a headache, I'm hungover, I haven't slept. It doesn't work that well. So I didn't want that in this sleep supplement because it's really hit or miss with some clients. 5-HTP is a precursor. So we put that in and it's kind of like there's a check valve between the 5-HTP and the melatonin. Your body will create what it needs. So it works quite effectively. So far, all these items that are in here are actually fairly common in a lot of sleep supplements. One that isn't common, that's got some really cool research behind, is the velvet bean or the L-DOPA. So L-DOPA is a dopamine precursor. The reason I put L-DOPA into max sleep is that it's a prolactin antagonist. Now, there's a lot of conflicting research behind this. Some people will be like, oh yeah, prolactin, that's good. And you know, prolactin goes through the roof after you have sex and you fall asleep, or at least with guys it does. But for lots of people who are stressed out, lots of athletes who are overtraining, prolactin is chronically elevated, and this can negatively impact sleep. So the L-DOPA in there antagonizes that. So we bring down the melatonin and bam, solid night's sleep. So the feedback we've been getting so far in Max Sleeper, people are like, one of two things. Either they're like, wow, I'm sleeping like I'm a dead zombie all night, which is awesome. That's what we want. They're waking up feeling refreshed. Or people be like, yeah, it's kind of weird. I only got 6 hours of sleep, but I woke up feeling like I got eight. Now, I would never, ever go out on a limb and say Max Sleep will enable you to get by on less sleep. I don't want people doing that. What I'm hearing from people is like, yes, I've only slept 6 hours. It feels like eight. I'm just going to leave that out there because I can't say with 100% confidence that that's what's happening. I need to get more feedback from people, but so far the results have been phenomenal. So we're pretty stoked about it. So, and I mean, like I said, these are components I've played with individually in combination over the past 20 years. And, I've tried everything over the counter and under counter for sleep, and I put a high value on sleep quality, trust me. And, this is what we've come up with so far.
Sure. And I know you got to get going to some consults in a second, but let me ask one more question.
Yeah. I lost track of time.
Yeah, man. We've been going for it. So you have both serotonin precursors and dopamine precursors in this supplement. Yeah. What is the balance between serotonin and dopamine relative to sleep?
Wow. That's a good one. Okay. So the easiest way to explain that would be if I was to draw three items out, I would put carbs, I would put serotonin, and I'd put melatonin. And there'd be an arrow going from each one. Carbohydrates broken down into serotonin. Yeah, if we want to split hairs, we can get some amino acids from proteins breaking down into serotonin also, but it's mostly carbohydrate. So that's where the sleep component comes in there. That's where you need the balance there. Dopamine is that reward neurotransmitter. So, you know, people eat chocolate and they're like, oh, I feel awesome. And people are hugging each other. They're in love. That's dopamine, right? That's that reward neurotransmitter. And there does need to be a balance between the two. And I could go on and on about selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors and how that's kind of like a band-aid solution for what is most likely dopamine deficiency in today's society, just from stress and overtraining and too many lifestyle stressors. So there definitely does need to be the balance between the two. Serotonin is a big one for sleep. And in some circles of conventional medicine, they'll actually use microdose antidepressants to initiate sleep. And that would be just that serotonin bump up there, converting into melatonin. But I think one thing that's lost is that the dopamine on there. People sort of put all their eggs into one basket when it comes to serotonin, but that dopamine is like super, super important. And like I said, for the reason of antagonizing prolactin.
Sure. There you go. All right. Yeah. So let's wrap this thing up and let you get going to your consults. I think we can keep going with this for a while, but I was going to start asking you questions about micronutrient deficiency and triaging micronutrients and all that stuff, but we'll have to save that for another time. But actually, speaking of which, do you ever listen to Rhonda Patrick?
I do. She's awesome. Yeah. She's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Super fascinating research. We'll put a link up to that, but she goes into the triaging of how the body preferentially uses micronutrients depending on what it perceives to be most important for survival. But nice. Yeah, let's wrap this thing up. And before you go, Dynamic Nutrition is coming to Chicago at the beginning of November. You guys are doing a seminar at Windy City CrossFit. You guys have your individual coaching, you have a group coaching program you just launched, you have your supplements, and you also travel around, you do some seminars, which are pretty interactive. You give people individual feedback based upon their food logs that they kind of bring in, and they tell you their stuff, and you break it down and show them the process. So it's a pretty fascinating seminar, according to my research and understanding. I'll find out in a few weeks. But it's going to be November 7th. At Windy City CrossFit. You can check Windy City CrossFit out at windycitycrossfit.com. And if you're interested in coming to that, the best way to do that is to shoot an email over to dynamicnutritionhq@gmail.com. We'll put a link down to that, but that's dynamicnutritionhq@gmail.com. And what else is important about that seminar, Mike?
Yeah, it's going to be an all-day seminar. We dig into the nutritional science in the first half and basically tell people what they should be eating and why they should be eating it and what they should avoid. And then in the second part, we also dig into supplementation also, obviously. But when we dig into prescribing individual macros, we put people in the hot seat. They come up, they give us their who is, what they're doing. And right on the spot, we say, okay, this is what we want your energy intake to be set at. This is where your macro should be set at. This is how you're going to partition it. Basically, in about 10, 15 minutes, we're basically giving them a prescription they can walk away with and then start to tweak and adjust from there. So that's something that that's sort of new on the nutritional seminar scene. We're sort of basically giving people implementation right off the bat there.
Yeah, man, sounds fantastic. It's not just a fire hose of information. It's like, here's some stuff you can do as well in addition to a fire hose of information.
Exactly.
Yeah, great stuff. So we'll post the links up to that. We'll post the links up to all the stuff we talked about. If you guys are interested in nutrition coaching, Dynamic Nutrition is probably the best spot to go, particularly if you're a fitness athlete. And we'll wrap it there and let Mike get to work here. And thanks for chatting, buddy. It's been great.
Awesome, man. It was excellent. We'll have to do it again and catch part two.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can go even nerdier next time. So thanks for hanging out, bud.
Very cool. Thanks, man.
All right, I'll talk to you later, sir. Okay. Bye-bye.